coming back home and taking a look at the JSE's performance amidst it all, the All Share just over 0.5% in the red today, pressured primarily by the Financial 15 space losing 1.6%, Industrial 25 down close enough to 8%, the Resources 10 component though managing to buck the overall trend today with a 0.8% climb. And joining me in studio now for a closer look at the equity space is Graham Frank from PSG Wealth. Graham, thanks so much for joining us this evening. So that in a nutshell, the day that was, and that negative tone set by global markets for the most part. How are you feeling amidst it all?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that came out now, just before I came on air, I see Caterpillar had quite a big miss, which seems to have caused a bit of pressure on the US markets. Obviously, Caterpillar, quite a bellwether for infrastructure and just general GDP growth around the world. So that doesn't sound great. But that said, we've still had an okay start to the year in terms of markets, certainly on the JSE, both the market itself and the currency.
Yeah, let's go through that local market performance specifically as we start to wrap January up and the extent to which it comes as a surprise to you, given, you know, just how many balls are up in the air on the international scene, but locally as well, the kind of uncertainty that persists in the political arena and, you know, what that triggers as far as economic performance is concerned down the road.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think the JSE is up 4 or 5% in rand terms year to, well, this month, which is year to date, obviously, and the currency is about 5% stronger. So in dollar terms, we're a good 10, maybe a little bit more percent up in the first month. Last year, we were at minus 25% year in dollar terms. So I'm somewhat surprised that we've had quite as strong a year so far. The retail numbers that have come out, the SA Inc., so those companies that face the local economy, almost without exception, are saying how tough it is out there. And yet the market's up, and in particular the banking sector, which gave back a percent today. That's still up 6% for the year.
Absolutely. As you say, those retailers have been in focus, and following on in that line has been Italtal today. Disappointing trading update coming through from that end. But also the big one, Pepkor, with some nasty surprises there too.
Yeah, so Pepkor was, as you say, today. If we just go back a little bit, we've had Mr. Price, we've had ShopRite, we've had Massmart, we've had AVI, and recently not necessarily a retailer, but Vodacom, which is also a consumer play, all without exception being very disappointing. Pepkor in particular today, they came out with total sales of 6% up, and that included new stores and new space. So if you just look on a like-for-like basis, they grew their sales by about 3%. So if inflation is running at 5, 6, 7% and they're growing at 3, obviously their volumes are going backwards, and that's not great. So the consumer is really in a very poor space at the moment in South Africa.
Pepkor, the one, and as I highlighted, Italtal as well. Your reading of those numbers that were put on the table?
Italtal was better. Italtal was certainly better. I think they came out with a guiding range of about 55 cents for the half year. So if you extrapolate that for the full year, it'll be somewhere north of 1 rand, and on a share price of 13, it's trading on about a 13 PE. As I say, Pepkor was the disappointing. That share was down 4% on the back of those weaker numbers.
Absolutely. Well, as you've highlighted, we've had retailers coming under pressure, financials managing to withstand some of those you know, potential economic headwinds. Today, feeling some of the heat, it lost, what, 1.6% by the finish. Do you think that's just some profit-taking coming to the fore there?
Yeah, I do worry a little bit about the banks over the next few weeks, which, you know, we shouldn't be too worried over the very short term, but I think we have to get through these next trading updates and these next earnings that's going to come out, given what we've seen with the retailers. That said, the banking sector, from a valuation perspective, is pricing in a lot of bad news. So you've got high single digit PEs, you've got dividend yields at 5, 6, 7%, depending on which bank you look at. So it is a worry for sure, but I think the valuations are there to support the banks.
Okay, we had some news emerged today of Nedbank and Old Mutual not cutting its ties with Zimbabwe just yet. What have you made of that announcement and the kind of risk you've got to price into that equation as a result?
Yeah, it's obviously small in their lives, but the interesting thing, thinking more strategically, is going back a couple of years, the whole world, all they wanted to focus on was Africa expansion. So Africa ex South Africa, that was Standard Bank, Nedbank, Old Mutual, ShopRite. and Nampak, and now everyone's saying, well, hell, you know, Africa's so much more risky. So in Nedbank and Old Mutual's lives, it's very, very small, but I'm somewhat surprised that they're going to stay the course, but I guess maybe they have to say that.
Absolutely, and time will tell on whether or not that pays off. In the meantime, we talk about expansion in the African territory, internationally as well. A lot of companies making headway, and property companies in particular. Today, Redefine International coming through with a pretty good update, a good renegotiation as well with some of its key tenants. It's inked three new lease agreements at two of its retail parks. What's your view on Redefine International, especially given the fact that, you know, it's that Eastern European exposure that you're buying into in particular?
Yeah, it's somewhat risky in the fact that we don't know a huge amount about Eastern Europe. That said, quite a few of the property companies, NEPI as well, have gone into Eastern Europe. So they obviously seen the fundamentals there. But again, it's reasonably small in their lives. I mean, the share price was up a couple of, well, 1% or 2%. So I guess they're cheering it. But yeah, they've signed three new leases, and that can only be good news for tenancies.
Absolutely. Well, let's wrap this conversation up with your stock pick at the moment, Graham.
So I'm going to go for AECI. As I said, a lot of the South African facing shares have come under pressure. AECI has not been immune to that. They are trading on a forward P of 8.5 times and a dividend yield of 5 or 6%. So we think it's offering good value. And, you know, if you put the retailers and the banks aside, I think the leverage to the bottom line that you'll see from some of these industrial companies, if we get a little bit of GDP uplift, could be quite pronounced.
Well, let's leave it there. Graham, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, Graham Frank is with PSG Wealth. Welcome back. Well, there are more than 100 registered Section 12J companies in South Africa. And according to Westbrook Alternative Asset Management, the market has raised an estimated 3.6 billion rand in investments. Now, one of the first entrants into this particular venture capital landscape, Nuva Investments, is celebrating its fourth year of profitable returns to shareholders. And we're joined in studio now by its co-founder and CEO, Neil Hobbs, as he fills us in on the investment case these investment vehicles actually present. Thanks so much, Neil, for joining us in studio this evening. So Anuva, as one of the first entrants into this landscape, celebrating, as I say, your fourth year of profitable returns to shareholders. Just how profitable and what kind of returns are you boasting right now?
Well, like, we're targeting a return of minimum 8% per annum on shareholder funding. We've exceeded that in our first year or two. We've been consistently profitable. And this last year, we returned a 19 million rand profit, which is off just under a quarter of a billion rand's worth of capital invested.
Yeah, and certainly an 8% dividend yield, nothing to scoff at. But over and above that, you know, a big part of the Section 12J allure is that you stand as a mechanism for taxpayers to actually maximize the tax allowance on offer under Section 12J of the Income Tax Act. So take us through just how much tax relief comes with this.
The tax relief is enormous. It's an extraordinarily generous tax allowance. So in effect, what government is saying is if you're prepared to invest in a venture capital company, which means investing in small and medium-sized corporations in specific sectors where we're creating jobs, we will allow you to deduct that full amount from your tax payable. In other words, if I've got 5 million rands worth of taxable income this year, and I put 5 million rand into Anuva or any other 12J fund, I will pay no tax at all.
Mm-hmm. That all well and good, but there are liquidity constraints involved, and immediate tax relief doesn't mean you know, complete tax benefit at the end of the day. Capital gains tax rules apply on exiting investments, and I guess that clarity that investors need to be aware of.
Correct. Government have wisely said, we expect you to hold this investment for at least 5 years. So if you hold this investment for 5 years, we will only charge capital gains tax when you exit. And that would be from a zero base because you've got a tax deduction on the initial investment. Mm-hmm. So if you realize your investment within a five-year period, you will have a full recoupment of the tax saved. After 5 years, you're paying capital gains tax only. It's not a bad deal. You're saving 45% on the way in and you're paying 18% on the way out, and that's not factoring in the time value of money.
Yeah, it sounds a bit too good to be true. So what are some of the risks? I mean, being highlighted as one of them is that these investments have a much higher risk profile than your traditional equity investments because there's usually very little diversification. So how much truth to that?
Alicia, I think that depends very much on the fund manager, whether the manager's looking for risk in the traditional venture capital model, where you're funding seven or eight businesses and you're hoping one or two do fantastically well and they'll pay for the ones that don't. Or you have a more modest approach. Westbrook, for example, are quite strongly biased towards property and asset finance. We have biased ourselves towards businesses that employ people. So we're focused on operating businesses that employ people. Mm-hmm. And the risk is effectively normal business risk. So in fact, it's less than that because we're talking about equity funding here. So the money we put into a company is equity funding. It retires the debt. So you take the interest burden away, you take the risk of non-payment of capital away, and we're talking about very benign funding into a business. And I think what also is important is, you know, when SARS released their memorandum on this, the idea is not only to put capital into businesses, it's to put intellectual capital into businesses. So it's encouraging retail investors who are business people to get involved with these companies and develop them. So it's a combination of financial capital and intellectual capital.
Okay, so you do a bit of hand-holding once that investment is made. What criteria, though, needs to be met when it comes to the investments you make? I mean, what are some of the key identifiers of companies that have the potential for growth, specifically in the current economic climate?
We're looking for a business that has demonstrated profitability. So we're not looking at startup. So we're investing into existing businesses where the owners are making profits at the moment, and we see an opportunity for exponential growth on the top line, and we essentially put in the working capital to facilitate that growth, and we put in the additional human resources. You know, the team might be incomplete, the management team at the point of investment. We might have to put in a marketing director or financial director and supplement the skills that are there in a smaller business.
Yeah. Inuva's raised more than 235 million rand in capital. And as you say, you identify SMMEs that show potential for growth. How vast a pipeline, an investment pipeline, are we looking at right now?
There's virtually unlimited opportunity to invest in this company and invest in companies with great growth potential. So we're a very virile environment. We could happily place considerably more capital than we have. Really, though, you've got to be able to manage that money and deploy it wisely. So we're looking at really bolstering the businesses that we have invested in and carefully selecting additional businesses to invest in. But there are extremely good businesses out there looking for investor capital.
Okay, well, let's leave it on that positive note, Neil. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Neil Hobbs is co-founder and CEO of Inuva Investments. So that's some of what's playing out locally. In the meantime, the U.S. government has returned to work as well, and that bringing some interesting development over stateside. We'll be catching up with Bronwyn straight after the break, so don't go away. According to financial rating agency S&P, the U.S. economy lost at least $6 billion during its record-long government shutdown, which ended on its 35th day last Friday. For more analysis on this now, let's head over to Bronwyn. Bron.
Thanks, Alicia. Well, the U.S. government is back at work. That's as the shutdown instituted by President Donald Trump comes to an end. But the head of state has warned that another shutdown could follow if he doesn't get a fair deal on money for the wall he intends to build between the US and Mexico. So for more on this story and what else is making headlines, let's cross to Paul Christian Britz from Deutsche Welle. Paul, thanks for your time today. So if you look at the math here, it just doesn't seem to add up. Trump wants $5.7 billion to fund the US-Mexico border wall. But according to S&P Global, the shutdown cost the US economy at least $6 billion. And now there's the possibility of another shutdown on the cards. So you have to ask yourself, is this all really worth it in the end?
Yeah, well, math doesn't really seem to be Donald Trump's strongest ability. Maybe he should go and ask some of the businesses in the country what they think. Because for them, this really does have, you know, real-world effects. Why? Because as much as Republicans would like a small government, they would still like to have a functioning government, and so do businesses. Because let's look at it. The IRS, for example, is shut down. Now, okay, taxes, you might say, not so bad. You know, let them close down. But what if you're waiting for a big tax refund that you were planning to invest in product, in machinery, or maybe you're looking to hire someone and you needed the funds? Well, right now, you cannot. It especially affects small businesses. The Small Business Association, for example, which handles loans for small businesses, is shut down. No loans, same problem. You can't invest money. On a larger scale, the SEC also not working. So that means we don't have any companies going public, no IPOs, and also financial products have to run through the SEC. Just the other week, I met someone from Bank of America who said, well, I have a product pending, but the SEC isn't looking at it. And so there's an opportunity cost, and that opportunity cost is high. In fact, within the White House, economists have counted that is about a 0.13% of GDP loss per week of the shutdown. That adds up to $26 billion. A lot of that will also come from non-paid workers who live maybe paycheck to paycheck and just can't simply buy things. So the cost for this wall is a lot higher than we might otherwise expect. Another miscalculation that Trump made, by the way, and interesting to note, the $1.5 trillion tax cut that he made last year, a survey just showed, has had no major effect on investment for corporations in the U.S.
And while we've had all of that play out, we've also had the U.S. lift sanctions on a number of companies linked to Russian oligarch Oleg Deripaska, who's an ally of President Vladimir Putin and who's currently being investigated for his ties to Paul Manafort, who's, of course, Trump's former campaign manager. Politics aside, though, the decision does have an impact on the commodity markets because sanctions have been lifted on Rusal, which is the world's largest aluminium producer outside of China. So how are we seeing that play out today, Paul?
Also, if the world's second largest producer of aluminium is back in the game, that does get noted. It's a weight off people's shoulders. Actually, it's a 300,000 tons of weight off people's shoulders. That is the amount of aluminium estimated by Citigroup that is currently in European storage that wasn't accessible to the market. Now it can be brought back to the market. That amount of number, just to give you a little context, it's about a fourth of the London Metal Exchange's entire stockpile. So that is a significant amount. And hence, when the news came out, the price for aluminum dropped after having spiked to a seven-year high last year in April when the sanctions were first announced. Interesting to note why Donald Trump doesn't want these sanctions to go in place. He says he's worried about an effect on the global aluminum industry. Now, if we look at that global aluminum industry and at the players, China in 2018 has had an aluminum export record year.
Paul, thanks so much for your insights. We'll catch up again tomorrow. Paul Christian Brits is from Deutsche Welle, and that's a look at your global news headlines. Alicia, it's back to you.
Thanks, Bronwyn, and that's where I leave things with you for now. After the break, it's tomorrow today, so stay tuned for that, and I'll see you back at 7 o'clock. Your stock pick at the moment, Graham?
So I'm going to go for AECI. As I said, a lot of the South African facing shares have come under pressure. AECI has not been immune to that. They are trading on a forward PE of 8.5 times and a dividend yield of 5 or 6%. So we think it's offering good value. And, you know, if you put the retailers and the banks aside, I think the leverage to the bottom line that you'll see from some of these industrial companies, if we get a little bit of GDP uplift, could be quite pronounced.
Well, let's leave it there. Graham, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, Graham Frank is with PSG Wealth.